This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we're reviewing a week in COVID mandates today. Tensions around what to require when, creating some fascinating drama. Governor Baker wants to keep it simple and voluntary when it comes to where and when to wear a mask.
Don't pay attention to the county-based stuff unless you want to. The most important thing is wear a mask if you're going to be around somebody who's vulnerable or you are vulnerable yourself. That's a lot cleaner and a lot simpler and a lot more straightforward for somebody to understand.
Meanwhile, acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey stunned, well, pretty much everybody with this pushback on the idea of a citywide vaccine mandate.
There's a long history in this country of people needing to show their papers, whether we're talking about during slavery, post-slavery. We heard Trump with the birth certificate nonsense.
She walked it back.
I wish I had not used those analogies because they took away from the important issue of ensuring that our vaccination and public health policies are implemented with fairness and equity.
But it is clear that debates on vaccine mandates fully on us. And one key proving ground right now, sports. The Patriots' Bill Belichick says, mind your own business when asked if he's vaccinated.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that.
But do you think that you will be disclosing at any point what percentage of the team is vaccinated this year?
Yeah, I don't know. Those are really medical questions.
While the Olympics puts COVID precautions on global display, join us for all of it and join our panelists, Renee Graham, a Boston Globe columnist and a WBUR contributor, and Joe Battenfeld, Boston Herald political columnist. Renee, welcome back.
Thank you.
Joe, great to have you.
Great to be here, Tiziana.
And listeners, you're a part of this. Join the conversation. Is the time of mandates over? Is it just beginning, somewhere in between? And how centralized or decentralized would you like at this point for those decisions to be? And I wonder, do you think it is time to mask up again to protect yourself and others, or time to put that responsibility on those yet to be vaccinated? 1-800-423-8255 is the number, 1-800-423-TALK, to join the conversation. So, Joe, is the time for another statewide indoor mask mandate upon us?
I think it's getting close to that time, if not time already. Everybody, you know, schools now are moving toward a mask mandate. My school or my kids go to just sent an email out and that they're going to require masks. Boston is going to require masks. And it just seems with the way the COVID cases are rising lately that there's nothing that we can do except to, you know, do what we know is best, which is to wear a mask. And unfortunately, that's what it's come to. But and a lot of people are going to be strongly resisting it. It's going to create some real problems, I think, out there.
So, Renee, I went to Joe first because you've been writing very clearly, hey, I never took my mask off.
Correct. it was fine. You know, I've gotten used to wearing the mask. I had reasons for wearing it. It was allergy season. It's good to have on. But just in general, you know, when they said, well, you don't need mask indoors, you don't need mask in these circumstances, the problem with that always was there was no way of knowing who was vaccinated and who was not vaccinated. And now, of course, the CDC has pulled back on that. So, I mean, Joe is right. We need indoor mask mandates again, even if you're fully vaccinated, because we do know that even though breakthrough cases are rare, you know, I believe the CDC recently said that, yes, you can still transmit virus to someone who's vulnerable or someone who's unvaccinated, even if you yourself are fully vaccinated. It's going to be happening in the schools. It's going to be happening in other places. I think it's just time. I mean, it's unfortunate. We should have been far past the point of even having conversations about mask mandates. But since people will not get vaccinated, we are where we are. And the best we can do in the meantime, if people are not going to get vaccinated, is go back to wearing masks.
So the two of you mentioned schools, and Renee, you just mentioned the CDC. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the CDC, was in Roxbury today and spoke at a town hall. Here she is.
We do know how to keep our children safe. We do so by getting as many people around them who are eligible for vaccination to be vaccinated and to keep our schools masked right now until we have more and more people vaccinated and until we have our young children vaccinated.
But Joe, Governor Baker has been really clear that he thinks that is a local decision. We know Worcester's thinking about it. Springfield and Boston have already decided for kids to be masked. Wow, we should just do that, right? The combination of mask and vaccine, we'll just call it maxed from now on. This is a local control versus statewide mandate kind of question. Why not go local control?
I think the governor is trying to have it both ways a little bit. Because he knows that a mask mandate will be very unpopular in many quarters, particularly in his party, and people are not going to like it. And so he's trying to let local governments or local schools, take responsibility for it. I guess the governor is the one probably who should be taking responsibility for it. Telling people, what they should do, but it's a tough call, though, and I think he is trying to straddle the line a little bit.
So I want to stick with the governor for a minute because he also seems frustrated with the CDC, who we just heard, Renee, about sort of the put them on, take them off, put them on, take them off. So here he is earlier this week in Revere.
We've always said, since the beginning of the pandemic that there is kind of a stay tuned rule associated with all this. But I think one of the things that's important here, and this has played out over and over again, is if you change your guidance every 48 hours, it gets really confusing for people with respect to what it is exactly you would like them to do.
And, Renee, as producer Jamie Bologna asked me, doesn't Provincetown know what's best for Provincetown? Doesn't Lawrence know what's best for Lawrence?
Doesn't the governor know what's best for Lawrence? Doesn't the governor know what's best for Provincetown?
Touché.
If the governor doesn't like the way this has been going, he can solve it by having a statewide mask mandate again. Now, yes, he does not want to do that, but there's something that doesn't really work about this piecemeal approach where you're in this community and there's a mask mandate and there's not one here. I also think that puts undue pressure on a lot of businesses. And I remember when we had a mask mandate, that there were some business owners I spoke to that were happy that it was a state decision because they could, it kind of, had their back. So they could say to customers, it's not us, it's the state, and as opposed to this is our thing. And they felt that people were less likely to push back if it was a statewide mandate as opposed to an individual business mandate. And so, if the governor doesn't like what the CDC is doing, then he can just step up and have a mask mandate. And right, it's not going to be popular. He is, in all likelihood, we assume, going to run again, and it might be held against him. But we're talking about, we're in a time again where Massachusetts is up to 1,000 cases a day again. And so at what point is a mask mandate going to come from the state level? I think we're already at that point, but for whatever reason, and the governor is hedging on this. And I think the problem is his hedging, not the CDC at this point.
So I'm going to play a little bit of sound here from WBUR Steve Brown. He was on with us on Radio Boston earlier this week. And he says that the state is watching the hospitalization rate and thinks that if it increases, that's where we're going to see a change in strategy.
If they see that on the horizon, I think then they're going to start hunkering down as we approach the fall. The governor and everyone in the state is saying, get vaccinated. And they're going to try to do the carrot, not the stick. But the stick is in the corner and can always be used.
And at the same time, I think about acting Mayor Kim Janey, who caused some controversy, and we will come back to that part. But later, when she clarified her comments, was really focusing on the kinds of policies that might further marginalize people who are already marginalized.
Here, we want to make sure that we are not doing anything that would further create a barrier for residents of Boston or disproportionately impact BIPOC communities.
So I want to pick up a call here, and we're going to put all of that together and just get this carrot and stick conversation going and I think start to tiptoe over into vaccine mandates as well. Let's hear from Jim in Medford. Jim, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think with the Delta variant growing and having had a waxing and waning approach to the pandemic, that we really need people to step up and be role models. You played a clip of Jim Belichick not being willing to be a role model and stepping up and getting vaccinated, or at least saying that he is. And I really think that people need to be socially responsible here. That's what it's about. It's about public health and everyone else's safety. It's not about each individual's safety.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. We will pick up more on Belichick towards the end of the show. We're going to do some sports stuff at the end of the show. But for now, I think that Jim's comments, Joe Battenfeld, kind of come into this. Do we inspire people or do we force people? And he's saying leaders need to be inspiring by example right now.
Yeah, and he has a good point. Leaders need to lead, and that's what it's all about. And I think, believe it or not, I believe that Kim Janey is showing some leadership, although we'll get back to her comments later. But I do think she is protecting the population that's very important in the city of Boston. And so she's thinking of them, and she's trying to say, basically, you know, we shouldn't hurt them by establishing, you know, by going for passport, vaccine passports or something like that, which I totally understand.
All right, I'm going to grab two more calls here, and then I'm coming to you, Renee. 1-800-423-8255 is the number. We've got Liz in Kingston. Liz, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Yes, it shouldn't have to be a mandate. It really shouldn't be this hard. We need to take care of each other, wear your mask, get vaccinated, and this goes away. They're not asking us to chop an arm off.
Liz, I love the call and the exasperation, because I think you're capturing some zeitgeist out there. I do want to add Dave in West Roxbury. Dave, go ahead.
Hi. Either we believe the vaccine works or it doesn't. The last lady was just on said, well, we have to max up in order to get rid of it. We were told that last spring, that this vaccine would get rid of it. So if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if we believe in it, and I do, I'm a fully vaccinated person, I should be fine. I think the only person who believes this besides me maybe is Charlie Baker.
All right. Thanks for that, Dave. So, okay. So Dave and Liz were awesome to come into the conversation, Renee, because listen to all of that exasperation. On the one hand, this is not hard. Stick a mask on your face, a vax in your arm. And on the other hand, this, here we go. No, we don't. Yes, it works. But what about? And put on a mask, but take off a mask. Undermines vaccine confidence. It is kind of a jumble, Renee. I get it, but how do we find our way through in a way that keeps us clear and together?
You know, I think it comes down to having sort of clear and concise leadership. And I think everyone, look, there's a lot of figuring this out as we go along, right? You know, it would be great to not have a mask on now. It would be great to be in a different place. The vaccines work, but they only work if you get vaccinated. And if you only have half of the country at this point vaccinated, that's a problem. And you add to that the Delta variant, which is more transmissible, which is making people a lot sicker, then the only thing you can do until people are willing to get vaccinated is to wear a mask. You know, it's hard to have these conversations now. You're talking about more than 610,000 people in this country alone who are dead because of COVID-19. And the fact that there are still arguments about whether or not we should be wearing a mask or whether or not we should be getting vaccinated is infuriating, because we should be at a very different point by now. Everything last year was about, okay, we need a vaccine, We have three vaccines that are working, and people won't use them. And so I think we have no choice but to look at them. Look, as I said, nobody wants to wear a mask again, but better a mask than a ventilator.
So Renee makes very strong points. Kind of drop the mic data there, Joe. It does make me come back now to something like the moment with acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey earlier this week. We played some of that sound at the top where she likened a vaccine mandate to enslaved people having to show papers or birtherism. Again, she walked that back. She clarified that she had a concern about marginalized populations. We just heard Renee say leaders need to be clear and consistent. Just reaction to that message, to what she said afterward, and how we do message those concerns without undoing good work already done about trying to get people vaccinated.
Well, I mean, she clearly chose the wrong words, and she acknowledged that. And, you know, it's a political gaffe. It could hurt her, actually, in the race for mayor. So it's a serious thing. But we should not, just because she said the wrong words, we should not ignore her real concern. Her real concern is that a vaccine card or vaccine passport or whatever you want to call it could become a weapon of discrimination against people of color. And the fact is that only close to 50% of people of color and Latino population are vaccinated, whereas as opposed to 35% of the white population is not vaccinated. So we do have a situation here where if we do have a vaccine passport, and this was Kim Janey's point, is that people are going to be discriminated against, and they'll be second class citizens. And not everybody who didn't get the vaccine is just doing it out of belligerence. There is a genuine point that some people don't have access to health care. They may not have transportation to get there. There are valid reasons why people may not have gotten the vaccine yet. And we shouldn't punish them.
So, Renee, let's put that up against some public attitudes. So the COVID-19 Consortium for Understanding the Public Policy Preferences Across States showed 81% of people in the Commonwealth say they support requiring a vaccine for everyone. That is the highest ranking in the nation. And then earlier this week, we had a conversation on vaccine mandates. We had somebody from Club Passim, which is requiring them for customers as well as employees. And then we had Lou Wolf of Hebrew Senior Life, who moved early on requiring vaccinations for employees in senior living. Lou jumped in on the conversation. Here he is.
I've been part of a lot of conversations over the last few months where people keep focusing on those people who are vaccine hesitant and the risk of them leaving. We live in a very educated community in general here in Massachusetts. There are just as many people, if not more, who are at risk of leaving your organization if you don't mandate, because they want to be around other people who are vaccinated.
Okay, and then I think, though, Renee, of Kim Janey's comments earlier this week. I think of reading Michael Curry, who's a friend of the show, Massachusetts Legal Community Health Centers, in the Boston Globe this morning, saying, shaming people is not going to work. Engaging is what works. What is the key strategy? You heard the exasperation just in our callers. How do we balance that and keep people at the table and drive those numbers up? And do we have to follow public opinion and mandate to get there?
Well, let me first say, can we all just stop comparing things to slavery and the Holocaust? Just let's stop doing that. The Holocaust is the Holocaust, slavery is slavery. The comparisons don't work, just stop doing it. It's a distraction. Beyond that, right, I don't know that shaming works, but there was this whole effort about incentivizing people to get the vaccination. And there were lotteries, and there was free beer, and there was free weed, and there were all these things people were giving out. In my mind, the idea that you can go to a movie theater or you can eat inside a restaurant is an incentive. You know, I got the vaccination because, well, A, I didn't want to die, but also because I wanted to be able to see my friends again and to see my family. Those were incentives to get the vaccine. So I think that the idea that if you get this, this is your reward. Like, people have this whole idea that if they got vaccinated, the reward was taking the mask off. That's not it. It's getting your life back. And if part of your life is going to clubs and going to bars and feeling confident that you're safe in doing it, then that should be the incentive. I'm not against the idea of a vaccine passport. I don't see it as, you know, being something that's tantamount to, you know, a passbook during the apartheid era South Africa. But I do think that it can be used in the idea of being an incentive, that these are the things you'll get to do. And I think that, you know, the gentleman who was just on was right. There are people who are vaccinated who aren't going to feel comfortable being in offices with people who are not vaccinated. You know, the problem is, again, you know, these things weren't really thought about a year ago because the assumption was that everyone would just line up and get the vaccine. So, you know, there's a lot of scrambling going on now, and it's important to get it right because what we're talking about are people's lives.
1-800-423-8255. We've got Jeremiah on the line in Worcester. Jeremiah, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you remember, but I actually called back in December. I'm an ICU nurse, and I was explaining
yes.
that we were never tested. But I will tell you that I did get vaccinated as soon as it was possible in January. And I'm just angry at the fact that we're going to be going right back to where we were. And I was so sad the first time going through, and all these people were dying of COVID because there was nothing we could do for them. And now I'm just angry because they're going to be dying because they made the wrong choice. And it's just so frustrating. And I'm getting married in October myself, and I'm really afraid that, like, that's going to all fall apart again. And it's so hard to just hold the compassion.
Jeremiah, I'm so glad you called back. I'm glad you're well and vaccinated. Thanks for calling. And hey, congratulations on the wedding.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Have a great day.
So that that combination, I'm thinking about that, Joe, and I sit here and I'm in the studio today and I see the CNN headline earlier that says Florida has broken its own hospitalization record with COVID today. And at the one hand, we have opportunity here. At the other hand, we do seem to be barreling back toward human disaster again, and we seem divided. It's almost a little paralyzing, Joe. What's the step we put, you know, what's the first foot in front of the other to stay together and save each other?
Yeah, I agree that, you know, public shaming is not the answer. I think understanding each other is the answer. And unfortunately, there is a certain segment of the population that is, they're never going to get vaccinated. It's just it's not going to happen, no matter how much you try to convince them. And we're paying the price for that now. And I don't know what the reason is, or, you know, I don't understand it myself, but I do know that people have distrust the government in general. And I think that contributes a lot to vaccine hesitancy and distrust the medical system. And they just don't want to be told what to do. And also, so I don't know how you resolve that.
So, Renee, just last thing on this. It's kind of a macabre question, and I recognize that. But one, we see vaccination upticks in some of the states hardest hit now by the Delta variant. I'm thinking about Louisiana, where the New York Times reports that vaccine demand has nearly quadrupled since they became one of the top states with Delta infections. I think about the early days when people were appalled at the thought that herd immunity would be achieved by people getting COVID as opposed to vaccination, and yet we see the Delta variant ripping through the country. Is Delta accomplishing, is Delta creating a situation that we have not been able to create otherwise?
You know, it's probably to some degree, but, you know, remember where we were a year ago. I mean, this is where we were, but this is actually worse. If Florida is now breaking records on hospitalization now, more than a year into this, it sort of gives you an idea of what's happening with Delta. It's doing that. It's scaring people. And at this point, you really can't turn on the news and not see one of those stories of someone who has died and their family's talking about, you know, but they didn't want to get vaccinated. Or you're seeing the person who's in the hospital saying, I'm so angry at myself for not getting vaccinated. I want to be able to do this, to live to get vaccinated. Those stories are endless. And you can't avoid them. And maybe that's making an impression. Maybe that people are seeing it in their communities. They're seeing it in their churches and they're seeing it among their friends and their family. Maybe that's what's finally convincing them, because they now know it doesn't have to happen. So, I mean, I don't want to say, well, you know, Delta has been great for that. But I do think it's having an impact on people. I think it's starting to scare people enough that they will go and get vaccinated. But we know the vaccinations, we need much more than where we are now.
Still with us, the Boston Herald's Joe Battenfeld and the Boston Globe's Renee Graham. And you as well, the number 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are reviewing a week where the news was all about COVID mandates. And the eviction moratorium has been one of those COVID mandates. It expired on Saturday. The CDC moratorium did. A number of progressives pushed the Biden administration, saying you have the legal authority to reinstate it. A lot of back and forth with the Biden administration. Yes, we do. No, we don't. And then the Biden administration, yes, we do, at least in a limited way, reinstated. And I want to talk about that. Do you agree? Is it the right thing to renew or extend that eviction moratorium? And what about the argument, hey, do it. If it gets stuck in the courts, if you weren't allowed to, Biden administration, don't worry about it, because people will be protected while it's stuck in the courts, and you'll essentially get what you want, even if it gets struck down. Is that good policy? And also, what about the people who rely on rent money for their income? When is it their turn to expect that inflow back? Or is that a false choice? 800-423-8255. So, Joe, Renee, I just sort of laid out sort of the outline of the conversation for you here. Renee, did the Biden administration do the right thing by responding to progressive pressure this week and extending the moratorium?
I mean, if progressive pressure is allowing people to stay in their homes during a pandemic, then the answer would be yes. The idea that we had to go through this sort of heart-stopping moment last weekend where people thought that moratorium was going to be allowed to expire, and it did expire, and that they weren't going to know what to do and whether they'll be able to keep a roof over their heads with the Delta variant, with their kids getting to go back to school. I don't know that the Biden administration had any choice but to do this. Of course, you know, it just extends it to October. So it really becomes kind of a game of kick the can. So there needs to be something more in place, because we don't know where we're going to be in October with this pandemic. And will we get to a point again where we have to go back into lockdowns and business will have to shut down, and what that's going to mean to people who have really lost so much in the last year through no fault of their own. So I think the Biden administration did the right thing.
So, Joe, I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but I'm going to put some sound in the mix. First, this is Monday. Feeling the pressure from activists, the White House sent senior presidential advisor Gene Sperling before the press. And here's what he said.
The president has asked all of us, including the CDC, to do everything in our power to look for every potential legal authority we can have to prevent evictions.
So that pressure, Joe, was coming because in part of some progressive members of Congress who were saying to Joe Biden, you have the authority, and even if you don't, we can work it out in the courts. I'm going to play some sound now from Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who was with us Monday afternoon. This is after she slept on the steps of the Capitol over the weekend with Representative Cori Bush to call attention to the lapsed moratorium.
The first action should be the White House doing everything, because they can mitigate this hurt more quickly. The White House and the CDC should act unilaterally. If things get tied up in the courts, then we'll be ready for that fight.
So Renee saying, hey, whatever, you know, keeping people in their homes, the top priority. And this has been partly a matter of tactics. You know, Congress clearly not going to get it done. The Biden administration saying Congress is the only one that's got the authority. Folks like Pressley saying just do it. And I wonder what you make of the process stuff here versus the outcome stuff.
Well, I think Biden looks a little weak here, and the Congress looks a little weak, to be honest, as well, because they could have done something too instead of gone off on vacation. Now they're pointing fingers at each other, and that's not real leadership. And I can understand why the White House did what it did, because it probably won't withstand legal challenges. But the bottom line is people should not be in danger of being homeless during a public health emergency. And anything you can do to prevent that, I think you have to do it. This goes for mortgage forbearance too. Banks shouldn't be foreclosing on people because of they're out of work during a pandemic. So, you know, we have clearly what the White House should be doing is showing leadership on this and protecting people. And, you know, of course, both are just Band-Aids. There needs to be long-term relief from these, you know, ruthless corporate landlords out there that are ripping people off, and, you know, these rents that are skyrocketing. But for now, the White House, you know, is doing what it should have done a week ago.
So there is so much in there, and I want to get to the long-term stuff. I want to get to the landlords. Let's just pick up our first call, 1-800-423-8255. We've got Jillian on the line in Chelmsford. Jillian, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm really glad that Biden is doing this, and but I absolutely agree that it's a Band-Aid, and I'm petrified when this is over about what's going to happen in Boston. I have my brother recently bought in Arlington, and due to his job, he really needed to be in the city limits, and he has a very good salary, and his wife has a good income as well, and they were only able to buy because of family money and sharing the price of the house with grandparents. And literally, they bid on six different homes, all of them for over $200,000 asking, and finally got one, and barely by the skin of their teeth.
So Jillian,
that family is in the rental market. The rental market is about to go insane.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And the amount of homeless.
Yeah, so Jillian makes a strong point there, and I wanted to pick her up because I think it plays to your point as well, Joe. Excuse me, I'm going to cough one sec. To your point as well, that there, you know, there's the short-term exacerbation of COVID and against some long-term housing issues here. Renee, these are big, nasty. I mean, price of housing is big, nasty, gnarly stuff. I wonder, are eviction moratoria, rent assistance programs, are they sort of a wedge to begin to take larger policy steps? And is this the way to get a wedge in place?
I mean, something obviously has to be done about the price of housing in the greater Boston area. It is impossible to buy. It is impossible to rent. And my concern has been that there are landlords who would take advantage of this moment to push out tenants they don't like, or whatever the case is, that they're going to use this against the tenants. But something has to be done. Now, even if we didn't have the issues of the pandemic have brought up, there has to be something done about housing. There's generally, year in and year out, there's no bigger issue in this area than housing. And it has just gone through the roof. Something has to be done. Something has to be done to make housing affordable, but also to give tenants more rights that they can't be taken advantage of in these ways. And have, you know, there was a woman who was on Twitter who was saying that her sister got an eviction notice before the Biden administration acted. She got an eviction notice while she was in hospice care. I mean, what are we becoming? Like, what is this? Something has to be done. I mean, it's just, you know, this is an example of how out of control things are, but there's a bigger problem that needs to be addressed beyond that.
So I want to put a couple of the pieces of the puzzle together. Renee, actually, there was a Boston Globe editorial on Monday from the editorial board calling on the Commonwealth to kind of level the playing field when it comes to court proceedings and evictions. I'm also thinking of a segment we did last week in advance of the expiration of the moratorium, where we had a housing advocate and we had Doug Quattrocci, who's the executive director of Mass Landlords. And I asked them both, right, is the first and foremost goal to avoid evictions? And interestingly, Doug said, yes, that's everybody's first goal. And rent assistance programs help both the landlords and the tenants. So, I wonder if we fix things like lack of representation for tenants in courts, if we know that there is potential goodwill, if we have rental assistance money, Joe, that we know is on the table and there's extra of it because of COVID relief, is there actually an opportunity to do something here, right? That old crisis breeds opportunity that we have the ability to do in the Commonwealth to actually begin to fix that problem longer term.
Yes, we should be doing more. And Massachusetts actually has a pretty good record of doling out money and assistance that, you know, that the federal government offered. A lot of states are way behind on this and did not jump on this. And so at least Massachusetts was doing a good job. And I do credit the Baker administration for that. But clearly something needs to be done long term. And there's no way that people should be forced out, especially during a pandemic. It's not just people, it's businesses. Small businesses are being forced out or being forced to close. I know of a half dozen I can just count on, you know, my hands that were forced to close, not because customers weren't coming back during the pandemic, but because they couldn't afford the rent anymore. So it's really a problem that goes across society.
Our guests still with us, Renee Graham from the Boston Globe and Joe Battenfeld from the Boston Herald. And we are going to talk now about sports and the pandemic. And we are going to talk about the Olympics. Yes, we are. But of all things, we are going to get there via the NFL. So let me ask you, listeners, what do you expect of your New England Patriots and other teams around vaccine mandates, mask mandates? This is the week of the COVID mandate. So let's talk about it. NFL has used a lot of carrots, a few sticks. What lessons can we learn from them if you follow it? What is right to expect of coaches, of teams? We heard a caller at the beginning of the show talking about Patriots coach Bill Belichick and what he wanted to see from him as what he said was a public leader. We're going to start there. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Joe, the NFL is an interesting way to get into all of this week of COVID and mandates, because it's arguably had a really good success with a bunch of incentives to get vaccinated and disincentives if you aren't vaccinated. Behavioral, financial. We We had Chris Sitterich from Radio Boston on the show earlier this week talking about the fact that over the last month, vaccination rates have gone up. Something for us to learn from this particular private sector enterprise?
Well, people are afraid of losing money, that's for sure. The financial incentive certainly worked with players, and punishment of potential of losing games, losing salary, all those things are going to cut very, not just work with NFL players, but they work with people in general. So I don't know how you can do that as a society-wide, but it certainly works in the NFL. And, as far as Bill Belichick goes, I'm pretty sick of him not taking accountability for anything and not feeling like he doesn't have to answer any questions that he doesn't want to answer. I think we've all had enough of that. He's not showing any leadership at all.
Oh, so I got to play the sound now, and I want to flag before I do. Renee, you have publicly thrown your hands up in the air about the NFL for other reasons for a while now, but we got to play this. This is Henry McKenna, who covers the Pats for the Patriots Wire, asking Belichick about his own status on Wednesday.
Are you willing to share whether you are vaccinated?
Yeah, we're not going to get into that.
Okay. Do you think that you will be disclosing at any point whether, like, what percentage of the team is vaccinated this year?
Yeah, I don't know. Those are really medical questions.
What do we have a right to know, Renee, and what does he have an obligation to share or not share?
Well, add me to the list of people who've had an absolute bellyful of Bill Belichick. I'm sick of him and all this sort of mumbling through things and non-answers. There's way too much at stake. As we're talking about this, I keep thinking about Ron Rivera, who is the coach of the Washington football team. And he was expressing his frustration a few weeks ago about the low vaccination numbers on the team. He's a cancer survivor. And he feels like, look, this isn't a personal decision, because your personal decision can impact my life. And that's what we're talking about here. We saw what happened last year where, a game would get postponed or get canceled, and this team couldn't play because this one got sick. Again, we have a way to stop that now. There are vaccines. It won't stop everything, but there has to be a mandate. The NFL, I've had all kinds of problems with Roger Goodell, but the NFL has gone a lot further in trying to address this. They need to take that next step and just have a mandate. Because this sort of, I don't want to do it, and it's not acceptable. And the NFL's vaccination rate is simply too low. And when you have someone like Ron Rivera, who's all but begging his players to do this for their coach, and they still won't do it, that's a problem. So, Goodell needs to step up again and have a mandate.
So I actually think we have that sound from Ron Rivera, and I think Marquise is going to try to pull it up for us right now. Let's see if this works. Here we go.
I'm truly frustrated. I'm beyond frustrated, and part of it is, and the reason I walked in with the mask on is, I'm immune deficient. I just wish and I hope that our guys can understand that.
So it's so interesting, Joe, because that sounds like the same exasperation we heard from callers earlier in the show.
Yeah, and if you really want to get exasperated, take the example of a professional golfer, Bryson DeChambeau, who's one of the young stars in the game. He actually got COVID, could not go to the Olympics because of it, and when questioned about it, said, no, he didn't take the vaccine, and, quote, I don't need it. Now, try to make sense of that one. So, this is not just going on in football, it's going on in other sports, too.
So let's talk about other sports now. Although, I got to tell you, it's hard for me to get off of this one because there's so little time when I feel like the NFL has things to teach me in my life. It feels like such a rarefied environment. And yet, I guess I got to come back to you one more time, Renee. Such a microcosm happening there of the tensions, experiences, carrots, sticks, controversies, anger of the larger public. Is that surprising? I am surprised.
I mean, the NFL is all of us. It's every office. It's every business. It's everyone who's sitting up and thinking about how they're going to navigate the unvaccinated, the vaccinated, going back into indoor spaces. It's all of that. I was impressed with the NFL really putting serious policies in place. But it just has to go further. And this idea that, well, I don't believe in it or I don't want it, then I guess you can sit the season out if you don't really want to do that, because you don't have the right to endanger other people. In the example of Ron Rivera, again, of someone who is a cancer survivor, and I'm sure there are other players on teams who are cancer survivors, you don't have that right. And this idea that somehow, you know, well, it's my personal medical decision. Well, sure, it would be if you were the only person who was going to get sick. But since that's not the case, you know, have a little consideration, have a little morality, and think about your teammates, think about your coaches, think about the fans. If you want to be out on the field, there are things you have to do. This season, one of those things should be getting vaccinated.
All right. As we move to the Olympics, I am going to note right now on Week in Review that 12 months from now, I am going to be looking back to the day when both guests said, I am fed up with Bill Belichick. And that is going to feel like a watershed moment. All right. I do want to get to the Olympics for a minute. Renee, you said, you know, the NFL is all of us. Well, the Olympics really is supposed to be all of us. And they were so heavily influenced, shaped, mandated, suppressed by COVID. Was it satisfying? Joe, what, did the games satisfy you this way? Were they inspiring?
I mean, I'm a big Olympics nerd, so I'll watch anyway. But I do have to admit that it loses a lot of its luster when there are no crowds there, and when people are more concerned about COVID or being forced to drop out because of COVID. Some of the top athletes couldn't participate. So it does take away a lot from it. And I understand the games have lost billions of dollars this time around and because of that. And, you know, but like I said, I'll watch the Olympics anyway. I'm just kind of a geek about that.
So, Renee, a lot of local athletes that we watched, some, you know, like Gabby Thomas, the Harvard student who won bronze in the women's 200 meters with great success. Also heartbreak for Lynn boxer Rashida Ellis in her opening round match. Both strong black female athletes, which was clearly a theme of this Olympics, especially with Simone Biles.
You know, I think, you know, I've watched a bit of the Olympics and I've enjoyed them. But like Joe, not having crowds there did make it feel a little bit different. But more than anything, the takeaway for me is going to be Simone Biles saying, no, I need to take care of myself. And I think it was a watershed moment for athletes. But I think it was a watershed moment for a lot of us. You know, we all have these moments when we need to take a step back. We don't always have the flexibility that Simone Biles had, but the idea that I need to take care of myself, I will do my job better if I can deal with this first, I think was hugely important. I hope that what people remember, you know, beyond the opening ceremonies or who got what medal, is what Simone Biles did and got a lot of criticism for doing it. I just think that was, you know, I hate to sort of say courageous, but it was courageous because it's just something people don't generally do. And to sit there and in such a measured way, talk about mental health, especially as we've talked about mental health and how people have been impacting this last year, I think was hugely important. And to me, that's what I'm going to remember the 2020-2021 Olympics for.
So, Joe, in listening to Renee there and thinking about conversations we had this week, earlier this week, too, about this, I guess I'm struck by, I wonder if COVID created, we are so much more trauma aware as a polity, it seems, after this pandemic. And I wonder if it created, Renee said she got criticized, but she also got a lot of support. Did it create space that wouldn't have been there before?
Yeah, I mean, she did get a lot of support, I believe. I mean, there were some criticism, yes, but you can't blame her for dropping out and possibly endangering herself. You know, gymnastics can be a dangerous sport. And so you can't really blame her for choosing her mental health over her possibly getting seriously injured. And I think it was symbolic of what's going on a lot in not just the Olympics, but in other sports in general. Other sport top athletes are coming out and saying, I needed a mental health break, or deciding not to participate because of their mental health. So it really was a watershed moment in a way that Simone Biles, I think, and it's good for her for creating more awareness of the issue. I don't celebrate her because she dropped out, but I do think it created a lot more awareness of this issue.
And you know, I want to throw in the background, she was also there to create a reminder of sexual abuse from, you know, the former gymnastics coach, Larry Nassar. She was there to remind us of other traumas. I do want to note that, but I guess, Renee, in a second I'm going to go to Hubbubs, but I'm going to give you last word. Will anything in sports be fundamentally different after coming out of these Olympics?
You know, I hope the conversations around mental health and professional athletes will continue to be part of the dialogue and the narrative. You know, we always talk about, oh, that person didn't have their head in the game. I hope we hear that and think about it very differently now and why that might be and what else is going on for that person. You know, the pressures, the physical demands of it, all that what's happening in their personal lives, all these things that play into people's mental health. And I hope we have those conversations just not in only in the sports arena, but sort of throughout the rest of our lives as well.
All right. It is now time for our Hubbubs. We try to leave room for those brief local stories or events that caught our attention this week. Joe, what'd you bring?
Well, this was a little noticed decision that came out recently about the city of Boston mayoral election. Kim Janey, the acting mayor, cannot list herself as acting mayor or incumbent on the ballot this year. She has to list herself as city councilor. This decision came down as a result of the city's decision, the election department's decision. So this could be actually a significant development if she can't list herself as incumbent. People who may not be paying that close attention to the race often just vote for the incumbent if that person is there. So without that designation, I think that could potentially hurt her. I think not a huge amount, but in a close race, it could have a little effect.
So a trivia question for the weekend. I don't know. How was acting Mayor Tom Menino listed on the ballot when he ran for his first full term? That'll be interesting to see. Renee Graham, what did you bring?
After a hiatus last year due to the pandemic, the Fenway Concert Series returned this week with performances by Guns N' Roses, Billy Joel, and Green Day, among others. And as longtime Bostonian Edwin Sumter pointed out in the Boston.com guest column, no person of color has ever been a headlining act in the event's nearly 20-year history. And for those keeping score, Jay-Z co-headlined with Justin Timberlake. So let me add my voice to Mr. Sumter's and say it is long overdue for that to change. A city as diverse as Boston should not continue to have a premier concert series in iconic Fenway Park with a lineup that looks as white as a February nor'easter.
That line, Renee, that is the line of the weekend. All right. So mine, quickly, Shakespeare on the Common is back, and that just makes me happy. It's the Commonwealth Shakespeare Company's 25th season. Here's a little sound that our colleague Andrea Shea had in a story she did on The Tempest, their feature play on Morning Edition this morning.
Release them, Ariel. My charms I'll break, their senses I'll restore, and they shall be themselves.
A moment of contrition from the magician Prospero. This is the last weekend. It is free. They do ask that you go online and register that you'll be attending, but Shakespeare in the Park is back and makes me happy. All right. Renee Graham, Boston Globe columnist and WBUR contributor. Joe Battenfeld, Boston Herald political columnist. Thanks for joining us for Week in Review.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, folks, that is our show for the day. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Walter Wuthman, Amanda Beeland, and Cynthia Betubiza. We had help from Ali Audette. Marquise Neal is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. It's Friday. Have a weekend. But then thanks for listening and join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.